The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Hello, I'd like to deposit this to checking.
Fate is a fickle master.
What?
The future is uncertain.
Okay, and what's my account balance?
Ah, the horizon is cloudy. I see a long, treacherous voyage filled with great peril.
Look, can I just get a deposit slip or something?
A fortune bank teller. Surprising. What's not surprising? How much you could save by switching to GEICO.
I see a yellow-eyed serpent.
What?
And a low APR.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The president sparks a backlash for his remarks on immigration.
Plus, the search for survivors as the death toll rises from California mudslides.
The concern is that there are missing victims.
Later, is time up for James Franco?
I completely support people coming out and being able to have a voice.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Let's start this weekend at the White House. Let's talk with correspondent Stephen Portnoy, who's there. Stephen, the president made some controversial comments about immigrants. What did he say and in what context?
In an Oval Office meeting with members of Congress to discuss the proposals for the so-called Dreamers, the president was presented with an option that has been worked on by Lindsey Graham, the Republican of South Carolina, and Democrat Dick Durbin of Illinois. And they had proposed something having to do with not just the Dreamers, but also it would limit the number of people who could take part in the visa lottery. It would curb the family migration that the president calls chain migration. But one of the other things that these two senators proposed had to do with hundreds of thousands of people from Haiti, El Salvador, Honduras, a couple of African countries who have been in this country legally for years under what's called temporary protected status. And the two senators proposed that their deal might also cover those people. The president reportedly erupted at that. And he said, according to the telling of those who were in the room, that some of these countries are S-hole countries. And he asked why we couldn't get more people from countries like Norway. Now, the president himself denied that he used that language. And two Republican senators, Tom Cotton and David Perdue, said they do not recall the president using those comments specifically. But Durbin insists that he said it and that he said it repeatedly.
And on Friday, the president did not respond to questions from reporters at the end of an event commemorating Martin Luther King Jr. Day. So obviously this is probably not the last we're going to hear about this issue. Does this scuttle at all any type of progress towards a bipartisan deal on immigration reform?
Well, I think the jury's still out on that. You know, the president said that what was really outlandish was the proposal that was brought to him by Senators Durbin and Graham. There remains some optimism on Capitol Hill that a deal will be done by the end of this coming week. That at least keeps government agency doors open, because remember, Friday is a shutdown deadline. But beyond that, the broader question of what to do with the Dreamers, Dick Durbin, the Illinois Democrat, who, by the way, is the number two Democrat in the Senate, says that it'll now be incumbent on Congress to work out a deal itself and then give it to the president.
In other news, the White House announced the president's decision on the Iran nuclear deal. What was that?
Well, the administration announced on Friday afternoon that the president will keep the U.S. in the Iran deal. He'll issue waivers of sanctions that would otherwise go back in place. But the administration says this is the last time the president will issue such a waiver. The president also imposed new sanctions unrelated to Iran's nuclear program that touch on Iran's alleged human rights abuses and the handling of protests in recent weeks, censorship and crackdowns. The president going forward, his aides say, will try to work with the European allies to get them to agree to start negotiations on a new nuclear deal.
Before leaving for Mar-a-Lago for the long holiday weekend, the president got his physical at Walter Reed Friday. What are we expecting from that?
Well, on Tuesday, the White House physician, Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson of the U.S. Navy, will come here to the White House to brief reporters. I'm sure we'll have lots of questions. But the president was asked how well that physical would go. He said he'd be surprised if it didn't go very well. And he said the markets would be very upset if it didn't.
CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy. Thanks, Stephen.
You bet, Steve.
Residents of Montecito, California are still dealing with the aftermath of a mudslide that destroyed homes and killed more than a dozen people. CBS's Tom Waite is there with more.
On East Valley Road in Montecito, a haunting scene. In this muddy debris field is where two homes once stood. A section of one of those houses appears to be wrapped around a tree. Furniture and other belongings buried and crushed by tree trunks and rocks. On social media, a family member posted kids were missing from this area. And on Highway 192 nearby, more mind-boggling destruction. This open debris field was once a well-manicured road surrounded by trees and homes. It's been reduced to boulders and a river of mud and rocks. Homes that once stood here are barely recognizable.
My mind is still not wrapped around it. We're still processing this.
DJ Leonello was home with her two young kids when the terrifying storm barreled through.
It's just a really gnarly process that we're all going through. Yeah.
DJ and her husband's first thought was to protect their kids. The storm was raging.
Rushing, just thick water, it sounded like. Yeah, and then, of course, all the pops and crashes and ripping.
Their neighbors sought refuge in DJ's home.
About three households of people that came up covered in mud to our house because we live on higher ground. They were rescued by kayak, some by helicopter, I believe, and they just kind of took refuge at our house for a while.
Meanwhile, cadaver dogs were out once again with crews searching for missing victims. On Olive Mill Road, rescuers say one of the dogs alerted here, but nothing was found. All of these horrific scenes playing out as this community tries to begin to heal. Here is another area of concern for rescuers, the basement level of the Montecito Inn. Crews have been working to clear out all the mud and debris that swept down in there when these storms rolled through. The concern is that there are missing victims down inside of it, but rescuers are having a very challenging time getting it cleared so they can check. Tom Waite, CBS News, Montecito, California.
Rare talks between the two Koreas before the Winter Olympics, just weeks away. This scene seemed unthinkable just weeks ago. Five men from the south, five from the north, shaking hands. Dire warnings of war replaced with diplomatic warmth. The North Koreans said they are serious and sincere, offering what they called invaluable results. They could afford the optimism because the conversation was not about Kim Jong-un's nuclear program. Instead, focusing mainly on North Korea's attendance at next month's Winter Olympics. The North quickly offered to send a high-level delegation, including athletes, a cheering squad, and performing arts groups. The South asked that the two countries march together at the opening and closing ceremonies and resume reunions of families separated during the Korean War. North Korea coming to the Winter Games is a big win for South Korean President Moon Jae-in, who has called them the Peace Olympics.
The Olympics is not going to solve anything.
John DeLury is an expert on North Korean affairs. He says Kim Jong-un may feel confident enough in his weapons program to now engage in diplomacy. Do you see these talks going beyond the Olympics to something more substantial?
Well, this is a very fragile process, but I'm seeing a lot of political will in Pyongyang and here in Seoul that the two sides want to make this a very different year, that they're serious about dialogue, and that really they're talking about more than the Winter Olympics, but they have to take this step by step.
Correspondent Ben Tracy reporting. Still to come, is Oprah mulling a run for the White House?
I do think she's intrigued by the idea.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. President Trump confirmed on Twitter he isn't going to London to open the new U.S. embassy there. The BBC's Peter Bowes reports the president says he's opposed to the deal made to sell the old U.S. embassy property to move to a more secure location and facility.
Essentially, he is saying that he didn't want to be associated with a decision that harks back to the Obama administration, that the decision was a bad decision, as he put it, a bad deal, and that he didn't want to cut the ribbon.
The decision to move the U.S. embassy was made back in 2008 during the Bush administration. A big development in the Russia probe by the Senate Intelligence Committee.
More than 300 pages of transcribed testimony from Fusion GPS founder Glenn Simpson was made public Tuesday. Hello. Hillary Clinton's campaign hired Fusion GPS in April 2016 to do research into Donald Trump. Fusion GPS then hired Christopher Steele, a former British spy, to investigate Mr. Trump's past. Steele compiled a dossier which claimed, among other things, that the Russians had compromising information on Trump. Simpson testified that Steele took his dossier to the FBI because he was concerned it could be a national security threat. Simpson said that the FBI believed Steele's information might be credible because they had other intelligence that indicated the same thing. And one of those pieces of intelligence was a human source from inside the Trump Organization. Senator Dianne Feinstein, the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, unilaterally made the decision to release the transcript of Simpson's testimony. She wrote, "The innuendo and misinformation circulating about the transcript are part of a deeply troubling effort to undermine the investigation into potential collusion and obstruction of justice. The only way to set the record straight is to make the transcript public." The president and his allies have challenged the information contained in the dossier and have launched investigations into Fusion GPS's role in the campaign.
This investigation into Mr. Simpson began as a desperate smear campaign by Mr. Trump and his allies because of Fusion GPS's connection to the so-called Trump dossier.
The president maintains there was no collusion with Russia, and the Mueller investigation is politically motivated. Mola Lenghi, CBS News, Washington.
Joe Arpaio, the former Arizona sheriff who was spared a possible jail sentence when President Trump pardoned him for disobeying a judge, announced Tuesday that he would run for the Senate seat being vacated by fellow Republican Jeff Flake. KPHO-TV's Jason Berry sat down with the 85-year-old Senate hopeful.
Arpaio spent 24 years as sheriff of Maricopa County, where he was extremely popular, until he was voted out of office in 2016 following a wave of controversy. Last year, Arpaio was convicted of criminal contempt for defying a court order to stop racial profiling. He was later pardoned by President Trump. We asked him if the conviction might influence Arizona voters in the race for Senate.
I don't think it'll have an impact because you know what? The people of this state are not stupid. This country, they all know it was a hatchet job.
Someone else who may be considering a run for office, Oprah Winfrey.
Oprah's best friend had a lot to say on whether the media mogul may make a run at the White House. Gail King, co-host of CBS This Morning, says after years of watching The Oprah Show, you learn you always have a right to change your mind.
I do think she's intrigued by the idea. I don't think at this point she is actually considering it.
Sunday was a historic night for Winfrey, a 60 Minutes special contributor. She became the first black woman to receive the Cecil B. DeMille Lifetime Achievement Award.
A new day is on the horizon.
Now, some seem to think, even hope, that Winfrey's words could have doubled as a campaign rallying cry. The internet quickly ran with the hashtag Oprah2020 Sunday night. Oprah herself seemed to put the matter to rest on CBS This Morning back in October.
There will be no running for office of any kind for me.
But then Winfrey's longtime partner Stedman Graham stoked the fire, telling the LA Times that Winfrey would absolutely run for president if the people want her to. King says he misunderstood the question.
Stedman says that he thought the reporter said to him, would she make a good president? And he said, absolutely she would.
A White House spokesperson told reporters, quote, "We welcome the challenge, whether it's Oprah Winfrey or anybody else." Meg Oliver, CBS News.
Former White House chief strategist Steve Bannon is out at Breitbart News, which he had led as executive chairman. It follows remarks he made to a journalist published in the new book Fire and Fury, in which he questions President Trump's mental state and disparages his son, Don Jr. Former Breitbart spokesman Kurt Bardella.
Steve has ostracized himself from all of his benefactors, financial, including the Mercer family, obviously President Donald Trump, and falling out of favor with him.
North Carolina's lawmakers will have to redraw state congressional district maps. CBS News correspondent Jim Crisula in Raleigh explains why.
North Carolina's controversial congressional district map drawn up by the Republican-controlled legislature is unconstitutional and illegally gerrymandered. That's the ruling from a panel of three federal judges that gave North Carolina lawmakers 2 weeks to come up with a new map. The ruling is the first time a federal court has blocked a congressional map because the judges believed it to be partisan gerrymander.
The White House is announcing the rollout of the new timetables associated with the recently passed tax reform measure.
Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin says timetables along with an online withholding calculator for businesses means Americans will see changes in their pay sooner than expected.
Workers and their families will receive larger paychecks starting in February.
And he says,
and based upon last year's withholding tables, approximately 76% of taxpayers were withheld so that they had refunds at the end of the year. We expect, based upon the new tables, there will be no material change in this number.
Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Washington.
For the first time publicly testifying to a Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee, State Department officials confirmed what the vast majority of the 24 Americans injured in Havana, Cuba experienced. Medical Director Dr. Charles Rosenfarb.
Various descriptions were given. A high-pitched beam of sound, an incapacitating sound, a baffling sensation akin to driving with the windows partially open and in a car, or just an intense pressure in one ear.
Yet there's still no finding on what or who was behind the attacks, but an FBI report apparently casts doubt on any type of sonic attack. Top diplomatic security official Todd Brown.
That doesn't mean that acoustic element couldn't be part of another type of style of attack here. And I do know that other types of attacks are being considered in connection with this.
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has launched a new high-level probe of the attacks. The Trump administration is facing a new legal challenge to its continued detention of men at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
The Center for Constitutional Rights is suing to get the Trump administration to release remaining detainees.
Our hope is that we could get before a court within a few months and have a ruling soon after.
Maher Azmi is the center's legal director.
I think inevitably, whether it's this action or another one, the Supreme Court will get involved. They have to get involved. This kind of lawlessness can't continue forever.
The center wants a judicial review of the legality of the decision keeping the 41 men at the prison. Gary Nunn, CBS News.
Up next, the public outcry after a hospital patient was dumped onto a Baltimore sidewalk.
All she had on was a hospital gown and socks.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Like what you're hearing? Get even more great content from CBS News Radio podcasts. Listen to TV broadcasts like CBS Evening News and Face the Nation on demand.
I'm John Dickerson.
And don't miss The Takeout, a politics, policy, and pop culture podcast from CBS News Chief White House Correspondent Major Garrett.
We have our first member of the Trump administration cabinet at our table, Mick Mulvaney.
Well, you asked the wrong people first.
Subscribe now at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Google Play.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. A University of Maryland hospital in Baltimore is facing a public backlash after a video was posted of what appears to be hospital security guards escorting a woman from the ER to a bus stop in nothing but a hospital gown and leaving her there. Correspondent Jeff Pagase has more from Baltimore.
So you all are okay with leaving that woman out there like that?
In the video, four hospital security guards are seen pushing a red wheelchair away from a bus stop. They had just left this patient in the freezing temperatures. All she had on was a hospital gown and socks.
So y'all just gonna leave this lady out here with no clothes on?
So you were about in this area when you started recording?
Yes, actually just near that lamppost.
Umamu Baraka was recording with his cell phone.
She's in the heart of downtown Baltimore with no clothing on, vulnerable, fully exposed, literally. I became enraged.
Go ahead and sit down.
The University of Maryland Medical Center apologized and promised a thorough investigation.
What you saw in that video is not a process that would occur with any frequency at all.
There is no national database that tracks so-called patient dumping incidents. They often occur because a patient lacks insurance or financial resources.
The legal requirement is that a hospital make sure that a person is fully treated.
Catherine Lehman is with the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights.
What I see from that video is a person who was not stabilized, is a person who needed further care. Clearly, there was more that that hospital needed to do.
To protect her privacy, we are not identifying the patient, but in a Facebook post, her mother said that she is with family, and she called that video horrifying and said that her daughter will get medical attention at another medical facility. Jeff Begay is CBS News, Baltimore.
Meanwhile, Baltimore is also dealing with children coping with frigid schools this winter. Correspondent Errol Barnett has more.
Freezing and cold and chilly.
Small Liliana Tagliaferro walked to school on icy and untreated sidewalks Tuesday. But last week, it was the freezing temperatures inside that had her mother, Asunta, angry.
What schools have to close because a pipe burst, because the heat's out. That's been really frustrating.
Schools across the city had water bubbling out of pipes and warped floors during freezing conditions, with children indoors huddled in coats.
You guys are cold?
Yeah.
Super, super cold.
Chastity Spears took her daughter out of school.
It's icicles in the classroom. The cold water jug is frozen with ice. It's inhumane for these children.
I think that this is the product of long-term issues not being dealt with.
We asked Governor Hogan if he shouldered any blame.
We shoulder a lot. While I don't have anything to do with the day-to-day operation of the schools, we have an obligation to help provide oversight and funding.
Hogan is offering $2.5 million to fix the heating problems and is proposing an investigator general to look into why the city's schools, which he says are the fourth highest funded in the nation, are failing to protect students. Parents flooded the school board's meeting Tuesday night, filling four overflow rooms, demanding answers.
All of these issues have been present for years.
Meetings are nice. Action is better.
The BBC is under the microscope over how it pays employees after a top female editor quit.
The BBC is facing growing pressure over why it pays some women less than men in the same jobs, with lawmakers and Britain's anti-discrimination watchdog asking about the resignation of China editor Carrie Gracie. The respected China specialist quit when she found out she was paid significantly less than her male peers. One government official said the brilliant women working at all levels of the BBC deserve better. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
Actor James Franco is under fire, accused of sexual misconduct.
When James Franco won a Golden Globe Award Sunday, he was wearing a Time's Up pin, promoting a new campaign to fight sexual harassment and gender discrimination. But following his win, a number of women went on social media to accuse him of sexual misconduct, including actress Violet Paley, who tweeted that Franco pushed her head down in a car towards his exposed groin. Stephen Colbert asked the actor about the controversy on CBS's The Late Show.
You got criticized for wearing that. Do you know why? And what do you have a response? Anything you want to say about that criticism?
Well, first I want to say I wore it because I do support it. The things that I heard that were on Twitter are not accurate. But I completely support people coming out and being able to have a voice.
Franco also responded to actress Ali Sheedy, who in a now deleted tweet appeared to write, "James Franco just won. Please never ask me why I left the film TV business."
I have no idea what I did to Ali Sheedy. I directed her in a play off Broadway. I had nothing but a great time with her. Total respect for her.
Franco also said if there's restitution to be made, he will make it.
If I've done something wrong, I will fix it.
Nikki Batiste, CBS News, New York.
A gymnast is coming forward identifying herself as one of the victims of sexual abuse by U.S. Olympics Dr. Larry Nassar. Here's CBS News Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. John Lapook.
It's very, very, very difficult for her to have to live with this.
Gina Nichols told us about the pain her daughter Maggie endured as an alleged victim of sexual abuse. The elite gymnast was the first athlete to report team doctor Larry Nassar to USA Gymnastics, but she's only now revealing her identity.
She's finally decided that she is ready to make this public and help other victims of Larry Nassar and maybe make it a safer place for other athletes.
In a statement, Nichols said, "Up until now, I was identified as Athlete A. I want everyone to know that he did not do this to Athlete A. He did it to Maggie Nichols." Nichols says the abuse began in 2012 when she was 15 years old.
He was allowed as an adult man in his mid-40s or 50s to do whatever he wanted to as a physician with no supervision. We never gave any parental consent. Nobody was ever in the room. We couldn't even stay in that same hotels with her when she competed for our country all over the world. But then they allowed a molester to do whatever he wanted to our daughter as a minor. But we were supposed to trust USA Gymnastics. It's not okay. Where are the other adults that were there at the Olympic Training Center allowing this to go on?
More than 150 women have now accused Nassar. Gymnast Jessica Howard spoke about her experience during our Me Too panel. She described the trauma of coming forward.
I really, really struggle, and I don't know if it's ever going to go away. And I think that's an important thing for people to understand, that this doesn't just dissipate the moment you speak up. It's almost the moment that you speak up that you can actually start to process.
Nassar has been sentenced to 60 years in prison on child porn charges. Coming up on the weekend roundup, what went wrong for a mysterious U.S. spy satellite?
We haven't heard a word from any agency claiming responsibility for the satellite or giving us even a hint about what might have gone wrong.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. A mystery in space. What happened to a secret satellite?
3, 2, 1. Ignition. Liftoff.
The spy satellite made by Northrop Grumman was mounted in the nose of a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket.
We have had successful liftoff of Falcon 9 carrying Zuma.
The Sunday night launch appeared to go flawlessly.
And we've just passed max Q.
SpaceX said after a review of all data, Falcon 9 did everything correctly.
States have confirmed.
The rocket's first stage returned to Earth so it could be used again, while the second stage carried the satellite into low Earth orbit. Bill Harwood is a space consultant for CBS News.
In this case, we haven't heard a word from any agency claiming responsibility for the satellite or giving us even a hint about what might have gone wrong.
But the Northrop Grumman satellite apparently failed to separate from the second stage. The company would not comment, saying it was a classified mission.
If it didn't separate from the second stage, it would have crashed back to Earth along with it.
Something re-entered, but we don't know whether the payload was part of that re-entry.
Jonathan McDowell is an astronomer at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics.
And so this super expensive secret payload went down in flames over Africa, and that's what we think probably happened. So it's pretty tragic for the people who worked on it.
An investigation will have to determine what happened and which company, SpaceX or Northrop Grumman, is responsible. David Martin, CBS News, The Pentagon.
Our technology consultant Larry Magid took a field trip from Silicon Valley to CES, that big tech show out in Vegas. Larry, how did this year's show stack up to previous years?
In terms of what we saw there, I would say the biggest story is voice actuation, voice control of practically everything, mostly using Amazon Alexa, that technology built into their famous Echo speaker, and in some cases, Google Home. And I saw products that you would never expect, like a shower from Moen that you can turn on using the Echo, or a toilet that you could talk to and flush and even control the temperature of the water that cleanses you after you're doing your business. You name it. If it was something that could be controlled by voice, it probably is, or at least will be shortly.
So it sounds like automation, at least, is center stage in technology these days. What about robots?
Oh, there were robots, a number of them, toys and tools. I think the one that got my heart was a robot from Aflac. It's called My Aflac Duck, and its purpose is to soothe children with cancer. They give it to kids who have cancer. Hospitals give it out. And it empathizes with the kid. They can hold something, an emoticon, up to it, and it will express the same emotions the kid is feeling. And the duck can even take chemotherapy, and it quacks and does all those things. So that was my favorite robot, but there are plenty of other robots on display.
Including one I see that folds laundry.
That's right. I did see the laundry folding machine. That's not something consumers are likely to buy yet. Certainly it could be for cleaning shops, but eventually maybe it'll fold my laundry and I want it to put away the clothes and also put away the dishes as well.
A big honey-do list. What about mobile technology? I saw some ground being fought over by cell phone makers.
Oh, absolutely. Sony came out with some new phones. There were a lot of phones on the market. They're all out there trying to compete with Samsung and, of course, the iPhone X. And I saw some phones, for example, Huawei, which is a Chinese company, had a phone that looked an awful lot like an iPhone X. And that's sort of the form factor that everybody wants to emulate this year.
There was also a power outage?
Yeah. How can you run an electronics show without electricity? And that's exactly what had to happen. In that case, they actually evacuated the room, although there were still folks there. It went out for a couple of hours. It had nothing to do with the show. It was some kind of a transformer as a result of the rain. But nevertheless, people had to take a break from at least a big part of the show on Wednesday.
Technology consultant Larry Magid for CBS News on the line with his take on CES. Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, Steve.
One New Jersey town is fighting back against traffic apps.
This will change life in Leonia.
It should. There's approximately 60 streets that are going to be closed.
A way to control the out-of-control traffic for residents like Melissa Sosman.
How long does it take you to get out of your driveway?
Sometimes it takes 10 minutes, 15 minutes. It depends on who's going to be nice and how much I'm going to push up against their car till they let me out.
Leonia is a one-square-mile town in the shadow of New York City's George Washington Bridge. For years, whenever traffic would back up at the bridge, savvy commuters would get off the highway and take a shortcut through Leonia. If you knew the secret, there were ways to beat the jam.
Stay to the right to exit 70A, Leonia.
But now, everyone has Waze or other traffic apps that routes them through Leonia. And once the main streets get clogged, start sending commuters through residential side streets. Mayor Judah Ziegler.
Because they have an app that says take a right, then a left, then a right, then a left to shave 3 minutes off your commute, now they're all over every narrow side street in this municipality.
Their plan? Restrict the streets during rush hour just to Leonia residents. Have a hang tag in your car or get a ticket.
We're not talking about $20.
No, we're talking about $200.
From Medford, Mass. To Fremont, California, communities have become victims of the traffic apps. As Leonia's police chief Tom Rowe discovered, if you pass a law, the app will remove side streets from its menu of shortcuts.
And people will do whatever the app tells them to do, and it's scary sometimes.
It's what the app stops telling them to do that should make life less scary here.
In 1,000 feet, stay to the right.
Jim Axelrod, CBS News, Leonia, New Jersey.
It was overwhelmed infrastructure to blame for travel nightmares at New York's JFK Airport.
They looked through hundreds of bags and they weren't there. And then I finally found out that they were in another section.
Last Thursday's storm started the chain of events. It closed runways that forced 159 flights to divert to other airports. When those planes finally made it to JFK, they had to contend with regularly scheduled flights, mounds of snow, frigid temperatures, and not enough open gates. Then on Sunday, a water main broke and flooded Terminal 4. The main sent water cascading down onto the terminal. 3 inches of standing water knocked out the power and heat for a time. The Port Authority, the airport's operator, is being blamed for a breakdown in communication.
Airlines described it as chaos. The FAA indicated they weren't getting clear communication from the Port Authority as to what was going on the ground at JFK on Saturday. What happened?
What I'm saying to you is that an investigation is needed. We are starting it, and we are committed to follow it wherever it leads.
The American Society of Civil Engineers gives U.S. aviation infrastructure a D, saying another $4 billion a year is needed to keep up with growing demand, or what happened at JFK could happen a lot more often.
Here we have a system where people fly around on the most technologically advanced aircraft in the world, yet we're relying on infrastructure systems where they land and the airports that they have to go through that are just aging and aging.
The FAA did start ordering airlines to verify that there would be open gate space when their flights arrived before departing. It is worth noting that American and JetBlue thinned their flight schedules during the storm and operated without issues. Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, New York.
Coming up, the newest trend that may be coming to a health store near you, raw water.
The brand Live Water sells for more than $16 a bottle.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up. It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News.
And good evening. Wall Street today signaled its approval of the tax cuts passed by the Republican-controlled Congress.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. New help for some victims of Hurricane Harvey in Texas. Here's correspondent Omar Villafranca.
Liddell and John Harris thought their house would be safe, built on 12-foot stilts near a bayou. But when Hurricane Harvey made landfall, their home was swallowed by the floodwaters. 42 years of memories gone.
We don't have a door left in the house. It washed windows out. It was just something you can't explain to people.
The storm left the Harrises without a home. For the last 6 weeks, they've lived in a FEMA trailer. They briefly lived with family, but returned to Vider when John needed treatment for his lung cancer. 84-year-old John had started to lose faith.
He had lost hope, and he was just real distressed because we had tried so hard to get help, and it was just probably an hour before that I told him we have to wait on God, and these people drove up in our yard.
On cue.
On cue.
When the Son of Man comes,
The answer to their prayers, a local pastor who practices what he preaches.
The water was right below that gutter line.
Pastor Skipper Saul saw that many of his church members were homeless, living in RVs and tents.
That man needs to know that somebody's going to fight for him.
Isaac, open those flaps up on those tents.
Skipper recruited an army of volunteers from HEART, a Minnesota-based organization led by Tony Caterina that travels around the country rebuilding communities hit hard by natural disasters.
We'll bring in supplies, we'll bring in teams, and we'll help them rebuild their community because it's all about bringing hope to people that, quite honestly, are hopeless.
We're just so thankful, so appreciative for you people and for the angels God sent me.
A dangerous new trend for water.
In this marketing campaign, the quest for raw water is cast in a sacred light.
A surge of energy and peacefulness entered my being.
And as we saw in this San Francisco co-op, the pitch is working. Empty shelves are common here, where the brand Live Water sells for more than $16 a bottle.
Ordering our filled orb.
The company says their spring water is free of industrial toxins and rich in healthy microbes because it is not processed. Officials at the Centers for Disease Control say water is filtered for a reason and warn untreated water may contain bacteria, viruses, and parasites.
If you're not filtering it, if you're not disinfecting it, then you are creating a risk for yourself or anybody you give the water to.
So where are you taking me right now?
2,500 miles east in Harrison, Maine, Tourmaline has become another source of so-called raw water.
So we're looking at a what here?
Bedrock. High altitude, high elevation, natural spring.
Brian Pullen and his partner Seth Pruzanski say their water is the purest you'll ever taste, in part because of its age.
So how old do you think the water is that we're looking at?
The hydrogeologist that we had come up here said it's at least 10,000 years old.
What do you say to somebody who's watching this or thinking about this and they're laughing? Because water is water. You drink it when you're thirsty.
No, yeah.
It goes in your body.
That's what people are finding out.
Water's not water.
We are finding this out.
Tourmaline Spring is tested regularly to ensure it meets the same standards as the community water system.
Now, the water from this spring is actually used since the 1800s, including down in New York, as a health tonic where it sold for 40 cents a gallon. That's about $100 a gallon today. Tony DeCopel, CBS News. Harrison, Maine.
Fewer businesses are accepting cash these days.
There's an open secret to keeping the line moving at busy New York City lunch spot Two Forks, and owner Michael Kaplan has no problem sharing it.
With every cash transaction, the payment process was slowing down significantly.
So cash is now off limits at his fast casual restaurant. It's debit or credit card only, and most customers seem to be embracing the switch.
I never have cash on me. I always have my card on me, so for me it's pretty much easier.
From coffee shops to larger restaurant chains, more businesses are now banning bills.
14, 15.
Proponents say eliminating hard currency is not only faster, it also reduces the risk of robberies. But not everyone's buying into it.
Opponents argue these kind of places discriminate against people without cards who may be on low incomes. And in some places, efforts are underway to ban businesses from banning cash.
Not everybody has plastic.
A Chicago lawmaker is pushing the city council to make it illegal. In Massachusetts, it already is. A recent survey found only 11% of Americans choose cash as their preferred form of payment.
I don't use cash. It actually seems strange to use cash.
Would you like rice or farro?
At Dos Toros Taqueria, owners Oliver and Leo Kramer say they rarely have to turn away cash-loyal customers.
That's where everything's going. I know China's basically there already. India's halfway there. A lot of parts of Europe are mostly cashless.
And they're ready to cash in on a cashless future. Kenneth Craig, CBS News, New York.
Royal Radio. As Prince Harry and bride-to-be Meghan Markle visited a community radio station in London, here's correspondent Charlie Daggett.
That famous British reserve was nowhere to be seen on the streets of Brixton, South London.
Welcome to Brixton, Brother Harry. Welcome.
Especially when Prince Harry asked fiancée Meghan to turn to the crowd. And once inside, the prince was just as charming. Represent Radio was set up in part to counter a rise in knife crime among young people.
I can see why your show is so popular, though, because you're so thoughtful in the approach, but also so
engaging to listen to.
Of course, the mood and feel was gas. Hashtag gassed, because the royals were here.
Oh, everybody was hashtag gassed.
Why did you want to come out today to see them?
Well, I didn't actually came out. I came out doing my shopping and found out about it, so I decided to just stop around and have a look.
But this wasn't just about making an inner city public appearance.
Prince Harry and Meghan Markle are here to show their support for a program that aims to help those struggling with mental health issues and helps keep youngsters off the streets.
But it's those living on the streets that's caused controversy after local leader Simon Dudley suggested police should clear the homeless outside Windsor Castle before the royal wedding.
This shouldn't be a situation that's hit the headlines because of a royal wedding. This is a situation that should have hit the headlines because there's people sleeping in bus shelters.
It's a situation that has to be resolved. The royal couple have already made clear they want their wedding celebrations to extend well beyond those castle walls. Charlie Daggett, CBS News, London.
And finally this weekend, CBS This Morning welcomes a new host.
Welcome to CBS This Morning. I'm Nora O'Donnell with Gail King. And look who else is here. What's your name?
I'm a transfer student here. Yeah.
Welcome to the new school, John Dickerson.
It's not Face the Nation host John Dickerson joins the team, replacing Charlie Rose. That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your story ideas, chain letters, love letters, whatever, to weekendroundup at cbsnews.com. The show is always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.